Next, we are asked to describe methods for investing in non-domestic equity securities. When capital flows freely across borders, markets are said to be integrated. The world's financial markets have become more integrated over time, especially as a result of improved communications and trading technologies. However, barriers to global capital flows still exist. Some countries restrict foreign ownership of their domestic stocks, primarily to prevent foreign control of domestic companies and to reduce the variability of capital flows in and out of their countries. An increasing number of countries have dropped foreign capital restrictions. Studies have shown that reducing capital barriers improves equity market performance. Furthermore, companies are increasingly turning to foreign investors for capital by listing their stocks on foreign stock exchanges or by encouraging foreign ownership of shares. From the firm's perspective, listing on foreign stock exchanges increases publicity for the firm's products and the liquidity of the firm's shares. Foreign listing also increases firm transparency due to the stricter disclosure requirements of many foreign markets. Direct investing in the securities of foreign companies simply refers to buying a foreign firm's securities in foreign markets. Some obstacles to direct foreign investment are that the investment and return are denominated in a foreign currency, the foreign stock exchange may be illiquid, the reporting requirements of foreign stock exchanges may be less strict, impeding analysis, and investors must be familiar with the regulations and procedures of each market in which they invest. Other methods for investing in foreign companies are provided by global depository receipts, American depository receipts, global registered shares, and baskets of listed depository receipts. Depository receipts represent ownership in a foreign firm and are traded in the markets of other countries in local market currencies. A bank deposits shares of the foreign firm and then issues receipts representing ownership of a specific number of the foreign shares. The depository bank acts as a custodian and manages dividends, stock splits, and other events. Although the investor does not have to convert to the foreign currency, the value of the depository receipt is affected by exchange rate changes, as well as firm fundamentals, economic events, and any other factors that affect the value of any stock. If the firm is involved with the issue, the depository receipt is a sponsored depository receipt. Otherwise, it is an unsponsored depository receipt. A sponsored depository receipt provides the investor voting rights and is usually subject to greater disclosure requirements. In an unsponsored depository receipt, the depository bank retains the voting rights. Global depository receipts are issued outside the U.S. and the issuer's home country. Most global depository receipts are traded on the London and Luxembourg exchanges. Although not listed on U.S. exchanges, they are usually denominated in U.S. dollars and can be sold to U.S. institutional investors. Global depository receipts are not subject to the capital flow restrictions imposed by governments, and thus offer the firm and the investor greater opportunities for foreign investment. The firm usually chooses to list the global depository receipt in a market where many investors are familiar with the firm. American depository receipts, or ADRs, are denominated in U.S. dollars and trade in the United States. The security on which the ADR is based is the American Depository Share, which trades in the firm's domestic market. Some ADRs allow firms to raise capital in the U.S. or use the shares to acquire other firms. Most require U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission registration, but some are privately placed as Rule 144A or Regulation S receipts. Global registered shares are traded in different currencies on stock exchanges around the world. A basket of listed depository receipts is an exchange-traded fund that is a collection of depository receipts. The next LOS asks us to compare the risk and return characteristics of different types of equity securities. The returns on equity investments consist of price changes, dividend payments, and, in the case of equities denominated in a foreign currency, gains or losses from changes in exchange rates. A Japanese investor who invests in euro-denominated shares will have greater yen-based returns if the euro appreciates relative to the yen. Gains from dividends and the reinvestment of dividends have been an important part of equity investors' long-term returns. For example, $1 invested in U.S. stocks in 1900 would have been worth $582 in real terms in 2008 with dividends reinvested, but only $6 with price appreciation alone. Over the same time period, the terminal wealth for bonds and bills would have been $9.90 and $2.90, respectively. The risk of equity securities is most commonly measured as the standard deviation of returns. Preferred stock is less risky than common stock because preferred stock pays a known fixed dividend to investors that is a large part of the return, whereas common dividends are variable and can vary with earnings. Also, preferred stockholders receive their distributions before common shareholders and have a claim in liquidation equal to the par value of their shares that has priority over the claims of common stock owners. Because it is less risky, preferred stock has a lower average return than common stock. Cumulative preferred shares have less risk than non-cumulative preferred shares because they retain the right to receive any missed dividends before any common stock dividends can be paid. For both common and preferred shares, puttable shares are less risky and callable shares are more risky compared to shares with neither option. Puttable shares are less risky because if the market price drops, the investor can put the shares back to the firm at a fixed price, assuming the firm has the capital to honor the put. Because of this feature, puttable shares usually pay a lower dividend yield than non-puttable shares. Callable shares are the most risky because if the market price rises, the firm can call the shares, limiting the upside potential of the shares. Callable shares, therefore, usually have higher dividend yields than non-callable shares. The next LOS is to explain the role of equity securities in the financing of a company's assets. Equity capital is used for the purchase of long-term assets, equipment, research and development, and expansion into new businesses or geographic areas. Equity securities provide the firm with currency that can be used to buy other companies, or that can be offered to employees as incentive compensation. Having publicly traded equity securities provides liquidity, which may be especially important to firms that need to meet regulatory requirements, capital adequacy ratios, and liquidity ratios. The next LOS requires us to distinguish between the market value and book value of equity securities. The primary goal of firm management is to increase the book value of the firm's equity and thereby increase the market value of its equity. The book value of equity is the value of the firm's assets on the balance sheet minus its liabilities. It increases when the firm has positive net income and retained earnings that flow into the equity account. When management makes decisions that increase income and retained earnings, they increase the book value of equity. The market value of equity is the total value of a firm's outstanding equity shares based on market prices and reflects the expectations of investors about the firm's future performance. Investors use their perceptions of the firm's risk and the amounts and timing of future cash flows to determine the market value of equity. The market value and book value of equity are seldom equal. Although management may be maximizing the book value of equity, this may not be reflected in the market value of equity because book value does not reflect investor expectations about future firm performance. The last LOS for this topic review asks us to compare a company's cost of equity, its accounting return on equity, and investors' required rates of return. A key ratio used to determine management efficiency is the accounting return on equity, usually referred to simply as the return on equity. Return on equity is calculated as net income available to common, that is, net income minus preferred dividends, divided by the average book value of common equity over the period. Alternatively, return on equity is often calculated using only beginning of year book value of equity. The first method is more appropriate when it is the industry convention or when book value is volatile. The latter method is more appropriate when examining return on equity for a number of years or when book value is stable. Higher return on equity is generally viewed as a positive for a firm, but the reason for an increase should be examined. For example, if book value is decreasing more rapidly than net income, return on equity will increase. This is not, however, a positive for the firm. A firm can also issue debt to repurchase equity, thereby decreasing the book value of equity. This would increase the return on equity, but also make the firm's shares riskier due to the increased financial leverage from issuing debt. The book value of equity reflects a firm's financial decisions and operating results since its inception, whereas the market value of equity reflects the market's consensus view of a firm's future performance. The price-to-book ratio, also called the market-to-book ratio, is the market value of a firm's equity divided by the book value of its equity. The more optimistic investors are about the firm's future growth, the greater its price-to-book ratio. The price-to-book ratio is used as a measure of relative value. Often, firms with low price-to-book ratios are considered value stocks, while firms with high price-to-book ratios are considered growth stocks. A firm's cost of equity is the expected equilibrium total return, including dividends, on its shares in the market. It is usually estimated in practice using a dividend discount model or the capital asset pricing model. At any point in time, a decrease in share price will increase the expected return on the shares, and an increase in share price will decrease expected returns, other things equal. Because the intrinsic value of a firm's shares is the discounted present value of its future cash flows, an increase in the required return used to discount future cash flows will decrease intrinsic value, and a decrease in the required return used to discount future cash flows will increase intrinsic value. Investors also estimate the expected market returns on equity shares and compare this to the minimum return they will accept for bearing the risk inherent in a particular stock. If an investor estimates the expected return on a stock will be greater than her minimum required rate of return on the shares, given their risk, then the shares are an attractive investment. Investors can have different required rates of return for a given risk, different estimates of a firm's future cash flows, and different estimates of the risk of a firm's equity shares. A firm's cost of equity can be interpreted as the minimum rate of return required by investors in the aggregate to compensate them for the risk of the firm's equity shares.